religion. Give me that old time religion. Give me that old time religion, and it's good enough for me. Makes you love everybody. Makes you love everybody. Makes you love everybody, and it's good enough for me. Give me that old time.
Hallelujah, brothers and sisters. Welcome to the Inner Side Radio program, where that old-time religion makes you love everybody, depending on your definition of everybody. Like our old KPFT favorite and friend of the show, Brother Tom DeLay, said this week about that primary election in Virginia, Cantor's defeat was a victory for God. Praise Jesus, Wilbur.
A horse is a horse, of course, of course.
David Bratt, the victory teabagger, agreed, claiming his victory came straight out of heaven, which I believe is code for, we got that Jew out of there, which makes the entire Republican congressional representation 100% Christian. Which should come in pretty handy with all these holy wars popping up. God bless America. Speaking of loving everybody, I have a clip here from a House subcommittee on the Constitution. Testifying on the subject of the Establishment Clause is the Reverend Barry Lynn, a minister who is president of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. He is being questioned by one of Texas' most esteemed intellectuals, statesman, and tireless defender of the Constitution, Louis Gohmert. I know you may have heard this clip on Jeff Berg's show last week, but it's just too good not to repeat in its entirety. And I have no idea why there's a dog barking in Congress. I didn't put that in. I mean, I understand why the dog is barking. Obviously, his intelligence is being insulted, but I just never heard of a dog in a subcommittee before. Maybe he was sniffing for bombs, decided he'd heard enough. Who knows? Louis Gohmert, having a go at Reverend Barry Lynn.
I'm curious, in your Christian beliefs, do you believe in sharing the good news that will keep people from going to hell, consistent with the Christian beliefs?
Yeah, I wouldn't agree with your construction of what hell is like or why one gets there. But the broader question is, yes, I'm happy to. When I speak to...
Okay, so you don't believe somebody would go to hell if they do not believe Jesus is the way, the truth, the life?
I personally do not believe people go to hell because they don't believe in a specific set of ideas in Christianity.
No. Not a set of ideas. Either you believe as a Christian that Jesus is the way, the truth, the life, or you don't. And there's nothing wrong in our country with that. There's no crime. There's no shame. It should never be a law against those beliefs because God gave us the chance to elect to either believe or disbelieve. And that's what we want to maintain, is people's chance to elect yes or no, the chance that we were given. So do you believe?
Congressman, what I believe is not necessarily what I think ought to justify the creation of public policy for everybody, for the 2,000 different religions that exist in this country, the 25 million non-believers. I've never been offended. I've never been afraid to share my belief. When I spoke recently at an American atheist conference, it was clear from the very beginning in the first sentence that I was a Christian minister. I was there to talk to them about the preservation of the Constitution. And in fact, I said, you know, we can debate the issue of the existence of God for another 2,000 years. I want to preserve the Constitution and its effect on all people, believers and not believers, in the next 5 years. That's what I talk about.
So the Christian belief, as you see it, is whatever you choose to think about Christ, whether or not you believe those words he said, that nobody basically goes to heaven except through me.
We could have a very interesting discussion sometime, probably not in a congressional hearing.
Well, I was just trying to figure out, when you say Christian,
scriptural passages.
There's no judgmental. That's not my job. God judges people's heart, in my opinion. but just to try to figure out what we meant by Christian. So I appreciate your indulgence.
Texas Zone, Louis Gohmert, trying to explain why there are no true Scotsmen in foxholes, or the Constitution, or something. I'm not really sure. That dialectic stuff is just way over my head. It's all very Hegelian, I'm sure. So, are y'all ready to get your war on? Well, let's tune into some Russia TV with the always passionate, sometimes a little unhinged, but thoughtful financial reporter Max Kaiser.
Edwin Starr once sang, "War, huh, yeah, what is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Oh yeah, war, huh, yeah, what is it good for? Absolutely nothing." Say it again, y'all. While Edwin Starr may have been big in Motown, he was obviously no economic genius, for in the pages of the New York Times this week, economist, blogger, and professor Tyler Cowen argues that the problem for our economies in the West is that there just isn't enough all-out war these days. Stacy.
Yes, Max, this was economist Tyler Cowen. He's a professor at George Mason University. Sounds an awful lot like Tony Blair as well, also in the pages of the papers here in the UK, was calling for all-out war in the Middle East. Well, the headline reads, "The lack of major wars may be hurting economic growth," and his argument is that the perception and persistence and expectation of peace is actually harming economic growth because the world just hasn't had that much warfare lately, at least not by historical standards. Some of the recent headlines about Iraq or South Sudan make our world sound like a very bloody place, but today's casualties pale in light of the tens of millions of people killed in the two world wars in the first half of the 20th century. Even the Vietnam War had many more deaths than any recent war involving an affluent country. And he even gives a chart, Max, of these deaths as we see declining, declining since the 50s.
With Hans Blix at the helm. With Hans Blix. Blix. Blix.
Generals gathered in their masses.
With Hans Blix at the helm. Blix.
Camp Commando.
Blitz.
This is a UN operation, remember.
Blitz. Hans. Blitz.
Sorcerer of death's construction.
The U.S. military now installing a new command center at a heavily guarded...
Blitz. Blitz.
In the fields of bodies burning...
Listen to me.
This December, the wait is over.
December 8th approaches.
This December.
I think one of the keys here, Bob, is that we get access to scientists and officials. Remember, we can interview scientists anytime, any place, anyone.
The wait is over.
We have the authority to take them out of the country and their families, to intimidate them. Unfortunately, scientists and their families have met an untimely death when you return to Iraq, but
the wait,
we need access to these scientists
is over.
And their families.
We do have stories now that we have officials for Saddam hiding things in their homes.
Daddy.
And now there are rumors that ordinary Iraqis
Dad.
Could be hiding key weapons parts.
Dad. To keep the weapons. There's nuclear bombs in the fridge.
Ray.
And chemical bombs.
Dad.
Could you keep it? I'm trying to do this thing for the radio.
There's nukes in the fridge.
Put that thing down.
You could put your eye out with that
Don't
thing.
Touch that.
Kids drag in the darndest thing.
There's anthrax in the peanut butter.
Stop playing with your food.
In their homes.
Today, kids are bringing home Iraqis.
Where is your chemical weapons, Doctor?
What's this, Daddy?
Kaboom dissolves rust
These
stains.
These Iraqis are driving me crazy.
That's for ethnic cleansing.
Even this black buildup.
They want your oil.
Even if they've been there a while.
What can I do?
Use Kaboom to maintain your store.
Wow Chemical has the answer.
Kaboom is amazing.
Iraqi go.
Give me some falafel.
Is it hard to use?
Just point and spray.
It's right before your eyes.
No more Iraqi.
Cool.
And my floor is so shiny.
Where's my Iraqi?
And you'll never see that build up again.
Call to order Kaboom. As a special TV offer, you receive
Turn
two
down the television.
People are hiding things in houses and schools and other places.
What's this button do?
Don't touch that.
Father
Mackenzie, is there a scud in your pocket?
Well, you're a curious young lad. Come on over here to Father.
Call now.
Rocky Go by the makers of Atheist Motel.
I remember my son when he heard the B-52 over his head. I put my hand on his heart, and I felt his heart bumping like crazy.
Mama, do say, watch out for them. Mama!
So this is, war is always, unfortunately, the last refuge of an economic scoundrel who is unable to argue for free market capitalism and all of its benefits. But it's not surprising. On this show, we've said many times that the U.S. foreign policy is, and the U.S. dollar is backed by the Pentagon, is backed by war. The unstated truth there is that without war, the U.S. dollar would collapse. And so seniorage benefiting, accruing to the U.S. policymakers would also collapse.
He also says along these lines, it may seem repugnant to find a positive side to war in this regard. But a look at American history suggests we cannot dismiss the idea so easily. Again, even though it's repugnant, look what happened. We had nuclear power, the computer, the modern aircraft, the internet. But that's the argument many make about Hitler. Well, he built these great autobahns.
Right, exactly. The technological progress that is associated with wars have a residual impact in peacetime. Certainly the man landing on the moon is the result of the computer era technology coming out of World War II, and you had this big boom in technology. But I don't think it's a correct argument to make that the state declaring war on another state is going to enhance economic activity in a way that benefits the majority of those in the economy. Remember, this only benefits a very small percentage of warmongers and kleptocrats at the top, and you see that enormous spread between the top and the bottom.
We now take you live to Blandon Scooter on location.
I'm not sure if you can hear me. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
I'm standing in front of my television set here in a suburb in North Houston.
Could you turn down your television set?
Oh,
that's much better.
Timmy Geithner in this context, he reminds me a little bit of Tony Blair, because Tony Blair, you know, he at the time of the Iraq invasion, he believed he was on a religious crusade, that he was fighting evil. Now here we are in 2014, Iraq's imploding again. There's another war on the. And people are beginning to seriously think about Tony Blair going to The Hague and facing the reality of the war crimes that he committed, and that he should probably end up the same way as Saddam Hussein, hung from the highest yardarm. That would be an appropriate end to his inglorious career. Timmy Geithner, I think in 5 years' time, similarly, they'll recognize that this guy, for all the blather, that he was one of the architects of the biggest financial scam in wealth confiscation in history. And I'd like to see financial crimes rise to the level of war crimes and go to The Hague. Is that enough? We tried to bring Lloyd Blankfein to The Hague a few years ago under war crimes. We got a lawyer involved, and we didn't push it forward. But shouldn't financial crimes and financial terrorism as conducted by Tim Geithner or Lloyd Blankfein or Jamie Dimon, shouldn't that be a hanging offense?
Historically, financiers and war criminals have been joined at the hip, and this is nothing new. You can't have a war without being able to finance a war. And that's why banks and politicians are so tied at the hip, because governments require private financing. Hank Paulson, Lloyd Blankfein, Jamie Dimon, all these people have gotten together and been able to use their connections through decades to enable them to get away, really to get away scot-free so far from the crimes that they've committed against. They are crimes against humanity. They're crimes against the citizens. They're crimes against the economy, and they do require much stronger punishments than any of them have received. All that they've received are little tiny fines that go to their corporations and no even requirement to indicate any sort of culpability for what caused these crises and how they've gotten off richer and more powerful and more influential, more politically connected after them than before them.
When we equate them with financial terrorism, when you're talking about a fanatic, an extremist, a jihadist, there's somebody who's willing to kill themselves or others for their cause, and they use weapons of mass destruction. Here, let's say Tim Geithner, he's willing to kill himself and others for market fundamentalism, his cause, and he uses weapons of mass financial destruction, as Warren Buffett calls them. Aren't these terrorists, the ISIS people that people are fighting now in Iraq, aren't they cut from the same cloth, psychologically speaking? They're the same terrorist mentality. They believe in a misreading of their text, and not in the Quran, but Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations. He will pick selectively from that and justify mass murder and slaughter. Aren't they cut from the same cloth?
There's a sociopathic line that goes through individuals who kill others and individuals who slaughter their finances. You know, there's a requirement to disconnect yourself from general populations, general humanity, to consider yourself better than, whether it's because of your ideology or just because you believe you're a superior person. And a lot of these individuals really do believe that. They present themselves as sort of above other individuals.
Let me jump in here for a second, because we only have about a minute left. There's a lot of bankers on Wall Street now committing suicide, particularly at J.P. Morgan, because, you know, Jamie Dimon is somebody that when you realize what he's all about and you realize you're working for him, the temptation to kill yourself is quite high.
Well, not fast enough for me. Hell, but I mean, my take on that old joke is, hey, I'm a socialist. I'll give you the rope.
Okay.
That was Max Kaiser and Nomi Prince, a former banker and author of All the President's Bankers, doing their financial report from Russia TV. They do their financial reports a little differently over at Russia TV, as you may have noticed. But I don't agree with their broadening of the term terrorist, because the fundamentalist psychos of the ISIL, is that what they're calling them?
ISIS.
ISIS. They keep changing it.
Yes.
They're not terrorists. They're a guerrilla army using violence to conquer territory, and it's the civil war that every credible Middle Eastern expert predicted would occur when we decided to invade Iraq, which is a drawn-up and make-believe country with at least four distinctly different national groups with a whole lot of bad history between them. And it was only held together by fear and brutality under the control of an old school strong man dictator. We took him out. It doesn't get any more predictable. Everybody said it was going to happen.
Bottom line is, it's a religious war. That's all this is.
Well, even if there weren't religions involved, they're not the same peoples, and they've been beefing, yeah.
Right.
But that's, of course, a big part of it, with the Shia and Sunni thing. But with the Kurds, you know, but these lunatics, they're not terrorists, but they're lunatics.
No, and what's sad is that they're actually picking up our own weapons.
I know.
The Iraqi army is just leaving everything behind, doing what they did in the desert storms, just leaving everything behind. These guys are just picking everything up and using them.
That's a hell of a thing if you go over there and the last thing you see is a shell coming out your head with a USA written on it, huh?
Yep.
This whole concept that they're going to take over some territory and they're going to launch an attack on America. These guys are as fundamentalist as you can get. They're as dumb as the Louis Gohmert clip we played.
Oh, they're saying that the leader is more anti-American than even Osama bin Laden.
The Al-Qaeda kicked them out, right?
Yeah.
Being crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah. So these people are going to take over some land, right? They're going to put up some swing sets and practice, and they're going to attack the United States. Yeah, right. I mean, we were more likely to be killed by bee stings and alligator bites than terrorists at this point. These people think that mathematics are the work of the devil.
Mathematics were invented by the Arabs.
I know, and then they abandoned it all. So what are they going to do, build an inter-ballistic catapult or something? I'm really scared. So anyway, there's plenty of U.S. saber rattling this week from both sides of the aisle. It looks like we're going to be putting drones and bombers in the air. I hope I'm wrong, but I'm usually not. And this is the worst thing we could do. Bombing always makes things worse. People hate it when you bomb them. And the enemies in the cities mixed in with the civilians, it's just going to be indiscriminate murder. And whatever you do, you're still going to be in the same situation that we walked into in the first place. It's just, you cannot possibly win. I have some political ideology and maybe a few loyalties, but I am above all a skeptic. If you think you can pawn off a game plan where the United States can use military force to establish a peaceful solution, give me some evidence. I don't want your hypothetical scenarios. We have a great track record in the Middle East, overthrew the democratically elected president of Iran, a little favor we did for BP, installed a dictator who turned into a homicidal maniac and led to the Iranian Revolution, and we got an Ayatollah out of it. And we're not the great Satan. Satan has a reputation for being pretty clever and crafty and getting what he wants. We're idiots! We are idiots! You cannot bomb your way to peace, as the song goes. And we learned from none of our mistakes. Everywhere in Latin America we got involved turned into genocidal disasters. 250,000 indigenous people slaughtered in Guatemala by another great dictator we armed and supported. El Salvador, Nicaragua, killing fields. Those places are still a mess. You know, most of those kids in those holding camps down on the border patrol, you see that, all that stuff that week where they're all in there? They're all from Central America.
Yes.
There's hardly any Mexicans in there at all. It's still a mess. They're still refugees from the damage we did there. I grew up there in the Vietnam War. It was a catastrophe ramped up by an insanely egomaniacal Democratic president, LBJ, who just kept escalating the war because he didn't want to be the first president to lose a war. Apparently he hadn't heard about the War of 1812, where the Canadians handed our asses to us. Burned our capital. Burned our capital, dude.
And that's about as bad as you could lose a war. But Lyndon was bound and determined to score a solid military victory, no matter what the cost in human lives, because he was convinced the Dems would lose the 68 election if they pulled out. They lost anyway to a shifty-eyed, otherwise unelectable Richard Nixon, who ran on a peace ticket, got into office, and was even worse. You want to talk about terrorism? In its purest form, the most egregious act of terrorism in my lifetime was the bombing of Cambodia. Terrorism in its purest form. We saturation bombed the heavily populated Cambodian border, a neutral country, thousands of villages, estimates up to 1 million casualties, according to Chomsky, is pretty reliable. And as usual, we left the disaster so horrific, it gave rise to arguably the most insane genocidal maniac in modern history, Pol Pot, who killed another 1 million of his own population. Do you see a pattern here? That U.S. military intervention has a 100% success rate, installing the most bloodthirsty, murdering animals since World War II. Pinochet, another one of America's sweethearts. Pull your fingernails out over that guy. The U.S. government has the worst foreign policy track record in empire history. There is nothing in the win column in my lifetime, and I'm 59 years old. So what do you got, you pathetic reality deniers? What's your plan? Give me some evidence that your knuckle-dragging American exceptionalism and interventionalist policies are going to work this time. Show me your win. What do you got? Grenada? You've got nothing. American half-wit aggression invented jihad. Those beardy half-wits were on the way out before we got involved. There is no humanitarian or political disaster so horrific that American military intervention won't make it worse. And that's not an opinion. That's a fact-based documented truth. And if anybody has any evidence to the contrary, drop me a line. I really want to hear about it, but stick to the facts. Because I've been drowning in your bull spit all my life. My name is Scooter, and I'll see you next week.